I think AI will make healthcare more accessible for everyone.
AI can't touch, feel, see, recognize something like mental health.
Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today's Friday, March 15th. I'm Stephen Overly. During Politico's healthcare summit this week, we talked to attendees about the way that AI is transforming, really disrupting healthcare, and what AI's biggest impact will be.
We have to make sure that there are people who come from diverse backgrounds.
I definitely see it having an impact on health equity.
One of those people was Congresswoman Robin Kelly, a Democrat on the House Energy and Commerce Committee.
There's always going to be a little bit of bias. I mean, we're human beings, but also I think if you diversify the workforce, that will help with the bias. Like, representation matters, and it will matter in AI also.
Like a number of attendees, Kelly told me she's worried some people will be left out of the AI healthcare craze and said regulators should hold companies accountable to be sure that doesn't happen.
Make sure that you hear from all voices, that you get yourself in the communities that are the most in need, underserved, not served. I think that's very important too. And I always like the idea with COVID that there were navigators, like people from those communities that spoke the language of the people in the community and brought them along. Because just like with COVID, people didn't want to take vaccines. And that's like how I look at AI, that people, again, are not educated, not informed about it, and are afraid. So they need someone, a trusted voice, again, to bring them along.
This concern about who really benefits from AI-enabled healthcare was also a hot topic during our live podcast recording at the summit. I sat down with Dr. Andrew Trister, the Chief Scientific and Medical Officer at Verily, a life sciences company spun out from Google. As you'll hear, Trister is bullish on the potential for data and AI to deliver big medical breakthroughs. But he also acknowledged the U.S. healthcare system isn't really ready for that yet. Here's our conversation. I'm thrilled to be joined today for a special live taping of the podcast by Dr. Andrew Trister. Andrew is an oncologist who has spent the last decade at the intersection of healthcare and technology. He's had roles at Apple and the Gates Foundation, and today he is the Chief Scientific and Medical Officer at Verily, a life sciences company spun out of Google. Andrew, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Stephen. Great to be here.
Of course, you know, I'm really interested in having a frank conversation about how AI is transforming healthcare and the need to regulate it, because it seems that, you know, there is a lot of excitement, a lot of talk about AI, and I think some of those benefits are here, but some of them also, frankly, feel a bit like hype and aren't yet realized. So let's start. You know, Verily is a precision health company, right? Which, as I understand it, means it's care that is really tailored to a patient, their individual medical history, environment, and needs. You know, what's the most significant way that you are seeing AI transform the way patients are looked after right now?
Yeah, so even though there is hype, and that is true certainly since ChatGPT was released last fall, the fact is that we've been working on AI in medical care for decades. And that originally was in the form of let's help a doctor make a better decision, right? Expert systems in the 1970s. Those didn't really work very well because the totality of the data and the ability to take what we understand as physicians interacting with doctors wasn't really there. Later, we started moving toward things like augmenting our ability to diagnose. So looking at cells under slides for pathology, looking at radiology and images from CT or chest x-rays.
Right.
And those technologies have been regulated, and there are hundreds of them already in the hospital today impacting care. But I think that where the hype comes in, to your question, really comes into, can we get beyond those technical things that are sort of behind the experience of the patient and really push into what does a patient see? So how is it that they can access information that's generated by them or about them in a different way?
Right. There's sort of the healthcare that takes place behind the scenes before the patient is necessarily involved, and then what they actually interact with. You know, when I talk to folks about AI in healthcare, one of the regular topics that they bring up is drug development and the potential for AI to really speed up breakthroughs in new medical discoveries. I guess one question I have is, to what extent is that real today versus, you know, something that we're looking toward, you know, in the future, this sort of potential for an innovation utopia where medical breakthroughs, clinical trials, all of that just happens at a faster pace?
Yeah, this is an area of intense interest and certainly has been accelerating over the last couple of years. So there's been a lot of excitement in our companies here at Alphabet, particularly from DeepMind, which was one of the AI groups that got pulled into Alphabet as an acquisition and has actually spun out something called Isomorphic, which is using AI to determine all of the potential protein structures, something that has eluded scientists for a really long time. So now a computer can do that, and the question will be that from those proteins, can we figure out where to drug them? So if we know that there's something that might be a target, we can then build a drug more easily. And there are just one example of a few other companies that do the same thing. That doesn't mean that it's a medicine, though.
Right.
Right. So I think that's the part that's been harder. So even companies that have been doing this for a really long time haven't yet gone all the way to a regulatory filing and a medicine that's available on the market. So we're still waiting to see, can it really speed things up? But it's promising.
Is that like the big hurdle still to be achieved, is like actually taking this and making real drugs out of it that actually help people?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think the science is there. We can show how two things might interact with one another, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's tolerable or safe for a person. So going through what is now the pathway that FDA have laid out and other regulators worldwide to show that drugs are, or the potential medicine is safe and effective, I think that those are key steps that we still need to take.
Well, speaking of the FDA, I do want to talk about the regulatory aspects of AI. You know, in particular, AI is really only as good as the data that's driving it. You have to acquire a lot of data, and in the case of healthcare, a lot of very personal data, right? And sort of companies like Verily, Alphabet, your parent company, are being entrusted with this information. Some of that is protected by HIPAA and other privacy regulation, but some of it is not. So I'm curious what regulation is missing that might be needed as AI becomes more of the norm.
Yeah, it's a great question, because I think right now, you know, certainly after the Biden White House put forward the executive order on AI, the subtext of that was showing that AI touches every aspect of life, and that there's a potential for us as a society to recognize where is it that it's the most sensitive data about an individual, and how is it that we might be able to protect it, but not as a hurdle to getting us to that utopia where, you know, perhaps all doctors would use these tools and have better diagnosis, faster care, cheaper care, right? That's sort of the end state promise that we believe AI can get us to.
Yeah, that's the vision we're working toward,
right.
I guess.
But it is... But to get there, we really have to understand where is it that people feel comfortable today, and understanding what data could they contribute, what data can they generate, and what is done already within the health system, and how much control can people have over the uses of those data. Those are enshrined in legislation like HIPAA, although HIPAA didn't anticipate this AI revolution.
Right.
But I do think that there are opportunities now to update and to demonstrate what is good for the society, and then how is it that we still protect individual rights around control, particularly, and then what data are used for.
We'll be right back. And how much of the responsibility is on, you know, Congress or the government to come up with those rules versus a company like your own to sort of disclose to people how their data is being used and that sort of thing?
I think everyone that works in tech right now would like to see regulations that are very clear about how to move forward. But at the moment, we have taken a perspective that these are the most sensitive data that a person about a person. And so we disclose immediately up front with consent, with a process of informing a person, this is how the data can be used and how we will not use it. Like, you know, we'll never sell it, as an example. Those are, I think, reasonable guidelines that all companies that work in healthcare should follow. But that has to be, again, enshrined in regulation.
Continuing with regulation, you know, Washington is very in the very early stages of figuring out what kind of regulation, what standards need to be set around AI. There's this coalition of health AI, which is industry and academia, working at assurance labs, which are sort of setting some of these standards in the healthcare space. Google, your parent company, is part of that coalition. And so one question I guess I'm left with is, what is the appropriate role for private sector companies that have a financial interest at play in setting those standards that will govern our healthcare data?
Yeah, I think the Coalition for Health AI is a great example where private industry has come together and have also recognized the needs for patient advocacy, for providers, and for government officials, right? So there are multiple stakeholders when it comes to any healthcare regulation. And the goal, it was just announced, so we'll have to see how it comes about. But with the Coalition for Health AI, the goal really will be to allow all of each of these stakeholders to have a voice and to impact how these regulations can come about. But I think that these assurance labs are a really good first step. The idea here would be that we don't have to rely upon FDA or NIST or other government agencies to keep up with all of the changes that are happening. AI is moving at such a clip at the moment, it would be really hard to imagine anyone, even those people who are working on it, being able to keep ahead. So instead, the assurance labs can be one of those areas, sort of crucible, to help to test what new technologies can come about going forward.
You know, when you talk to tech folks about innovation, there's this mantra of like move fast and break things, right? And then when I talk to healthcare providers or doctors, they're all about, you know, where's the data? Where's the peer-reviewed study? You know, are we talking about this at a conference? And it's just sort of two different paces, it seems, of innovation. And I wonder, as someone who lives in between those two worlds, how do you reconcile that, and do you fall more into one camp or the other?
Yeah, there's a huge tension in my brain every day because of that. I think that there, what I would say is that I fall more on the idea of showing data, but I also recognize that adoption within the health system today is glacial. And,
right.
and for some innovations has been almost generational. Like you have to wait for the new docs who are trained with the technology to bring it up and start using it. And that's not appropriate. There are people who we can today affect their lives. They can live better lives, longer lives, healthier lives with technologies that exist today. And it just the gatekeeping elements of how the health system is set up reduces the applicability. So there's an equitable question about how is it that people access these tools. And sometimes that is the health system itself, the actors within it, the physicians, the payers. So that could be regulated as well.
That's, I think, such an interesting point because AI, for however powerful it is, whatever breakthroughs it delivers, is going to be integrated into an existing system, a system that we know in many ways is broken or certainly could be improved. And I want to ask about a couple of those. One is the cost question, because I think when you talk to people about healthcare, cost concerns is one of the first things that they talk about. Is artificial intelligence going to make healthcare cheaper? Is it going to make it more expensive? Is it, you know, and will it ultimately be something that really benefits the wealthy?
I think that's a reasonable concern and absolutely something that we have to recognize, again, as a society and as groups that are going to make these decisions to help to guard against, because the likelihood is that many things are going to follow where the money is. I mean, that is kind of the rule of a free market economy. And we heard earlier today about the role that drugs play in oncology. Oncology alone, care and research together, are 1% of GDP in the US. That's not 1% of like healthcare spend, it's 1% of the economy is oncology care and research. So that drives a lot of innovation toward oncology. Now, as an oncologist, of course, I'd say, please bring it on. This is great because
right.
my patients
yeah.
are suffering. But that doesn't necessarily apply in the same equitable ways to other conditions like Alzheimer's or GLP-1s. And we've talked a lot about how is it that as both regulators and also payers, right, CMS, what role they play for ensuring that there's access and that it's equitable for folks to be able to get these new innovations.
And who in the healthcare continuum should sort of bear those costs? Because I think the question too is there are going to be some healthcare systems that are able to invest in AI and new technologies, and some, particularly smaller rural systems, that will not have those resources. So how do you bridge some of those divides?
Yeah, I think right now, and that urban-rural divide in particular within the U.S., which we saw in over the last 4 years, it's odd to be actually on the anniversary of the global pandemic being declared. In that time, what were little fissures, and we recognized that there were social determinants related to access and related to care delivery, those became massive chasms. Part of that was misinformation and disinformation that we heard about earlier. But in many ways, I think that the infrastructure piece, the underlying technology that allows data to flow from a patient in their home, in the community, in from primary care and to tertiary care, that that part has to be a public good. And once that exists, then you can start to build all of the benefits of AI. But right now, there are a lot of tools being built within health systems that only benefit the people who already have access to the health system.
Right.
Because they're built on the data of people that already access the health system. It's the data that's already there. And so if we think about the people who couldn't even get to the point of having a doctor's appointment or couldn't pay for the drug to be included in the data set, we're totally blind to that population.
You know, the other piece of this is I wonder to what extent our healthcare system is even ready and equipped to deal with AI and to process all of this data. I know we've talked about this a little bit, but I just think of doctor's offices I go to where, you know, I fill out a form online in advance and then I show up and they hand me the same form to fill out on paper. And, there's a dichotomy between how we talk about healthcare and how it's actually delivered in practice. And so to what extent are providers equipped to even handle this sort of new wave that and everything that AI is going to throw at them?
Yeah, I think that the way the technologies have already been integrated into the clinic have not taken into account what it means to be a patient or what it means to be a provider, right? The electronic health record systems that we have ubiquitous now in the U.S. Actually, the American Recovery Act and the ACA and High Tech Acts kind of ensured that kind of digitization of the health system would occur, did not anticipate what the experience would be like if your physician now is spending more time staring at a screen and typing rather than looking at you and asking questions and so forth. And that has eroded the trust in the health system, that has affected many of my colleagues at a level of burnout, because there's much more time spent coding and billing rather than actually caring for people, the whole reason that people go into medicine at the end of the day. I think that AI plays a role in automating some things that are truly mechanical, like billing coding, as an example. And there are many examples now coming from Epic, working with Microsoft and OpenAI, although many other startups and companies that are doing the same, that the hope would be that if those get integrated appropriately, with the right security, of course, and privacy around the data, that physicians will not have to spend so much time. But the issue right now is that substrate is not the right one. Like, to put it on top of the EHR ignores the fact that the EHR has been a barrier to better care instead of an enabler.
Well, listen, Dr. Andrew Trister, thank you for joining us. You all can listen to this conversation and many others at Politico Tech, wherever you get your podcasts. But thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you all.
And that's all for today's Politico Tech. And for more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley. See you back here on Monday.